today is week four of the KSFR Fun Drive, and once again, we are asking you to give a call to 428-1393, 428-1393, and make a contribution to this wonderful radio station, KSFR, which we basically bring you programming 24/7, 365, of the best programming we are capable of doing on a crazy, crazy low budget. And we are listener supported, we have no commercials, we have very modest amounts of underwriting, and as a result of all of that, all we do is a couple of times a year we go on the air, ask our listeners to contribute so that we can call it listener supported public radio, and then we go back to doing what we do. So this is that moment when we ask people to call 428-1393 to make a contribution. And I have with me, sitting here in the cafe, Billy Blair, who has worn many hats and many important hats over the course of her long tenure here in Santa Fe. And currently she is the public information officer for the Lammel Foundation. Welcome.
Good morning, Mary Charlotte.
And joining us by telephone is Deborah Pickering, who is a senior scholar at the Marzano Research Laboratory. And she is here for the Los Alamos National Laboratory, for the Lammel Foundation's 16th Annual Conference on Education. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
So let's talk for a moment about education. You are here. Well, Billy, first you. Let's talk about these education conferences that Lammel does. What's it all about?
Well, what's it all about is that this will be our 16th, and every year we have a conference to help teachers get more tools in their toolbox to be better in the classroom. And over the years, we've had more than 1,000 people, from aides to teachers to school superintendents to, believe it or not, school board members attend these conferences.
Why do you say believe it or not?
Well, because one doesn't think of school board members as necessarily that engaged in the trenches. Right?
Well, they should be.
Indeed. Indeed. And they do come to this conference. And it's going to be tomorrow, starting at 7:30 at Buffalo Thunder. And people can actually walk in and register tomorrow. And you don't have to be a teacher. You could be an NPO director. My husband goes every year just because he always learns something. He's a substitute teacher.
Is that right?
Yes.
Well, Deborah Pickering, you are at the Marzano Research Laboratory, and you are engaged in something called reflective teaching. What is that?
Well, it's trying to provide teachers with more stimuli and more reasons for being very reflective about their teaching. It's not just reflective teaching, it's reflecting on their teaching. So teachers' days are crammed full of things to do every day. They don't have very much time to stop and say, how's this going? What am I doing that's really working? What am I doing that I need to change? And spend some time reflecting. So we're trying to help them. The conference, for one thing, gives them time to sit and reflect and think about those things. So any professional needs to be reflective, and we're just trying to motivate and reinforce that reflection process.
And so when you do that, when you engage, for example, with a group of teachers and get them to reflect, what are the things that they tend to find and change?
It varies from teacher to teacher. It's very, you know, it depends on veteran teachers and new teachers. Many of them, we hope that they feel validated. Hopefully, part of it is they say, you know, I'm pretty good at this. I'm good with students when I do these kinds of things. But I really need to work on these kinds of things. It might be I want to get more higher level thinking. Maybe I want to give them better feedback. Maybe I want to make sure that I engage them more. So different teachers at different times will focus on certain things. In fact, focus is the key. We want teachers to focus on things, not just in general say, how'd my day go? But say, that unit really worked well. I need to do that again. Or I need to really change this part for these students over here. These students over here were pretty successful. So it's constant because students are so varied. It's constant that teachers have to keep adjusting their teaching for the different students in their classroom.
What kind of challenges are teachers having that weren't there a generation ago?
You know, I think the challenges were still there. I think they are a little bit different. I mean, now teachers tell us all the time they compete with technology. You know, the students are accustomed to, short little sound bites, and they don't want to teach that way, so they kind of get kids to engage in things in longer term, to think about things for over a period of time, not just 140 characters. And so that's a challenge. That engagement's always been a challenge, but now it's just fighting that technology thing, that immediacy thing that the students come to the classroom with.
Well, there's also the fact of the phones themselves, that it's very hard for teachers to compete with the actual phone that is hidden in the person's, in the student's desk and so on.
Or not
I
so
know
hidden.
Teachers who have actually quit teaching because they say, I've been doing this for 35 years, I can no longer do my job because of the phone.
Oh, I don't hear that too much from teachers now. I mean, I think they say, look, technology is technology. There's appropriate uses of it, and they can use all kinds of technology in the classroom. And with good classroom management, they're overcoming that, I think. We're in the 21st century. That's not going to change. And so we say, what's appropriate at school, and make sure we monitor that, and then also make sure that we engage kids in other ways.
So what grade levels have you taught yourself, and what are the challenges of those classroom experiences, those age groups?
My teaching was all in middle school and junior highs, and which is a very challenging group of students. They're the same. The challenges are the same. Engaging kids, getting them to really care about reading and writing and math, getting them to apply knowledge to their own lives, that kind of thing. That's always been the challenge, always will be the challenge. And it's just a little bit different now. When you have middle school kids, many things are going through their minds, and we just try to keep, directing them back to we want to achieve learning goals here, so let's engage.
428-1393 is the number at the KSFR Fun Drive. If you like what you're listening to, if you like the kind of programs we have here on KSFR, please give us a call. Give us a call at 428-1393 and contribute to our Fun Drive. There are many people who have said, oh, yeah, I'm going to contribute this week, and some of you haven't called yet. And there are people who are first-time listeners who have never made a contribution to public radio before, and we would ask you especially to give a call and become part of Santa Fe Public Radio. We want to remind people that it really doesn't take much. You can give a few bucks a month. You can give a $25 donation. You can give a $2,500 donation or anything in between, high, low. It doesn't matter. What matters is that every single person who's listening give a call and actually engage with KSFR as these teachers are trying to engage with their students. 428-1393, engage with us. We are your public radio station. It's sort of like we provide a service the way cable TV or internet provides a service, only we don't force you to, we don't have a subscription. It comes to you for free, and then we ask you to give back twice a year. And pretty simple to do. All you have to do is call 428-1393. And we're talking to Deborah Pickering, who's a senior scholar at the Marzano Research Laboratory, and she's here for the Lanl Foundation Conference on Education. Now, here in New Mexico, we have this problem, which is we always come in somewhere between 48 and 50 on education. It's a kind of ongoing challenge and problem, and we have here poverty, hunger, inequality, substance abuse, poor diet. We have poor diet all over the country, and real challenges. What is the role of the teacher? I mean, these are such large and systemic and long-term and cultural and social problems that we have. What is the role of the teacher in addressing these?
Well, I think you make the classroom a place where kids feel comfortable, they feel safe, they feel that they can be, they can take risks, that they can be successful, and all of that is what a teacher can do. We can't change society, but we can make sure the school is a haven. I mean, I can't tell you how many times we hear students say, grown-ups say, when I was a kid, if I hadn't had school, I don't know if I would have made it. They name a teacher that says that teacher made me feel like I was worth something, that I could be successful. And that's what a teacher does every day. It doesn't mean it's easy, but that's the challenge of teachers. That's why people go into teaching, is to do that, is to be that haven, and have the kids leave having achieved success academically so that many doors are open to them.
It is one of the questions that we face in society today, where we're looking at a country that is in a kind of economic stagnation or decline, and what we need most is a highly educated workforce, and we're not really producing that.
I think we have produced a pretty highly educated workforce. I think we have some gaps, we have some holes, and we're working on those. I think all over the country, I travel all over the country, people are trying to do a better and better job. We have to set clear standards, we have to meet those academic standards, we have to help students, you know, start from where they are and take them where they need to be, and we're doing that. The challenges of a very diverse society is that the needs are just a broad span of needs, and schools constantly try to adjust and meet the needs of all the students. And there are many, many, many stories of doing a good job, but we still have a ways to go.
Tell us more about the Marzano Research Laboratory.
Well, the lab, there's several parts of it, but the lab part that I work with looks at the research and says, okay, we can read the research, but what does it say to a classroom teacher on Monday morning? What is it that the teacher needs to do in order to really use what we know about teaching and learning and go in the classroom and be more effective every day? So that's the whole point of saying, look, we know some things that work, so let's reflect on those, let's get better at those, and keep improving all the time. Because if we don't improve, we're just, you know, going through the motions. Professionals improve. So the lab tries to say, we're going to translate the research for you so you can now go in the classroom and be a better teacher.
What are some of the most important and interesting insights that you've come across in that research?
Let's see. That's an interesting question. Most important. I think probably right now the notion of how important feedback is to students, how important it is to not get too much feedback, but get feedback that really helps me improve, as opposed to just, you know, saying, look, you have to learn this by this time, and if you don't, it's too bad, you get a D. Instead, the feedback that says, you're not there yet, that is, makes a huge difference. If you look at the research, one of the biggest gains that you'll get in schools is to improve the way we give feedback.
How well are students doing on critical thinking and creative thinking?
Well, I think that's one area we work in a lot right now. We're not there yet. There's so many tests and so many other things, demands of the curriculum, that have told us, you know, just get through the curriculum and you don't have time for higher level thinking. But that's changing. People are really open to talking about, wait a minute, we've got to give kids these thinking skills. So the conversations in the country are very much about thinking skills and higher level thinking.
One of the things that I think is very important to do is to look at other countries that are doing a better job than we are as entire nations. And I was reading a story about Finland, which has, I think, the highest level education in the world in terms of the achievement that a high school senior has when he or she graduates. And one of the things that they do in Finland is they treat their teachers on the same level as doctors and lawyers. They have 6 years of professional education. They're very well paid. They have a high level of autonomy and a high level of professionalism. They are not treated like kind of low wage workers that have to work on evenings and weekends and so on. What about looking at models of other countries? Is that something we do here in the United States?
Well, I think we look at them all the time. I mean, people talk about Finland all the time, other countries as well. But you can't take a whole society and just take one piece of it and plant it in a different society and say it's going to work. I mean, it's just much more complex than that. I mean, they've had decades of, you know, changing the way society views education. You know, if you go over there, it's a different environment. We have wonderful things here, and we like our diversity, but they present us with many, many challenges, and we can't just pluck something from one country and say, oh, well, let's just do that here. It just doesn't work that way.
Although I have to say, a higher level of education, a higher pay grade couldn't help but make a difference.
Well, I can't quote you the exact citation, but there have been studies where they increased the salaries and tried to increase that in places in this country. It didn't work. Just sort of throwing money at the problem isn't going to work.
No, I don't mean increasing the salary of a teacher who's not performing well, but, I mean, in other words, making the profession a higher level profession. Because
yeah,
as it is now, there are some amazing teachers, but there's also a lot of teachers who who don't have what it takes to be a doctor or a lawyer, who do have what it takes, who can right. get into school to be a teacher.
Every state in the country is looking at teacher evaluation to try to address that issue. Everywhere is looking to say, how can we make this a profession where we monitor ourselves so much better than we have in the past?
We're talking to Dr. Deborah Pickering of the Marzano Research Laboratory, who's here for the Los Alamos National Laboratory Foundation's 16th Annual Conference on Education, which is happening tomorrow all during the day. And do teachers get a day off, Billy, to be able to go to the conference?
Yes, they do. And I'd like to point out we have another speaker. Dr. Pickering is speaking in the morning. And in the afternoon, we have Dr. Ken Wesson. And he blogs under the name Science Master. And he's going to address brain-based learning. And he kind of begins his talk by saying, well, if it's your job, teachers, to develop the mind, shouldn't you know how the brain works? And so he explains that. That'll be the afternoon session that starts at 1 o'clock.
He explains how the brain works in one short session?
No, in one short session. You should be there. Well, no, how the young brain works. And just like Dr. Pickering, he's well-known in academic circles. He's addressed educators on 6 of the world's 7 continents. And more than that, like Dr. Pickering, who's been in the classroom, he's been on his local school board.
Excellent.
Let me add one thing. Whenever people say, and I know you didn't mean this, but whenever people say teachers have the day off to go to a conference, they work hard at this conference. And I think a lot of people say, it's not exactly a day off that I have, because professionalism requires the kind of reflection and the kind of work they're going to do at conferences. And are there some who slept off, I suppose. But my experience is teachers really want to get better, and they work hard on these conference days.
I guess I just meant a day off from their classrooms.
I know.
And let me add, though, to what Dr. Pickering is saying, and that is that when teachers are at these conferences, when they leave the conferences, it's part of my work to go and ask them what they've learned, have they benefited, and so forth. They are inspired. They are jazzed. And almost to a person, they say, I have learned something that I am going to go use in my classroom on Monday morning.
428-1393 is the number here at the KSFR Fun Drive, and there are not a lot of phones ringing right now. So we would like to get the phone ringing and like to basically achieve the goal for our Fun Drive. And we set a goal every hour, and we've been setting a goal of $1,000 for each hour here on the Santa Fe Radio Cafe, because we know that there are people out there who are listening who can afford to make a contribution of, say, $25, $50, or $100, and we just get enough of those to get us through, and we will achieve our goal for this hour. 428-1393. We want to send a special challenge out to teachers and everyone who has ever had a teacher. That might include a lot of people. And you can pledge.
Everybody's an expert in education.
you can pledge in the name of your favorite teacher. And I had a favorite teacher named Mr. Chappett, who was my fourth grade teacher, who I wrote to about 5 or 6 years ago. And he had just retired, and he was really the most marvelous teacher in the world, and we did hands-on learning in the fourth grade, and I wrote to him to tell him what an influence he'd had on my life, and he wrote back a really long and thoughtful letter about how ours was the first class where he had tried out his ideas, and he remembered a play that I was in and that my friends were in, and remembered it in more detail than I did. And it was a really profound thing, because that year, fourth grade, set the direction of my life. And I think many of us have had that experience.
Fifth grade for me.
Really? Well, tell us about that.
Well, there was a fifth grade teacher who said, you know, Billy, you can write. Have you considered writing as a career? And it became my career.
Oh, my goodness. And just that little bit of encouragement. Well, it sort of feeds into what Dr. Pickering was saying a moment ago about feedback.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, the whole notion of school being this place that, I mean, it's how many hours we spend at school. And a teacher can connect with a student in a way that nobody else can. And believe me, I don't want to paint this picture that everything's just hunky-do. We have a long way to go. We need to monitor our profession better. We need to, there are some low-performing schools I work with that I'm appalled about some of the things that I see. But we're getting there. We're getting there and getting better, I think, all the time.
There are also so many issues about danger in the schools, and then they set up police and metal detectors and things like that in the schools, which is, I mean, I, when we were starting to talk about problems that didn't exist a generation ago, I don't know that when I was in high school, I had ever heard of, or indeed whether there was a single high school in my state that had a metal detector. And so this thing of treating young minds, young people, as potential criminals or sort of prisoners, that's a problem too. What does that do to their minds and to their attitudes about learning?
Well, I think, one thing we know is a safe and orderly environment is critical for students to learn. And so schools have their work cut out for them because we have things in society we have to acknowledge and try to make it safer. I still am very comfortable when students go off to school that millions of them every single day are in a safe environment, an orderly environment, and they're fine. We just have to be very, very diligent and very aware of potential dangers. I've been in schools where security is very, very good, and yet it's a wonderful, positive environment where kids can learn.
Meaning they have those kinds of cops and metal detectors?
Yeah, they have places that, you know, people kind of see it as like when you go through the metal detector at the airport, you know, I'm fine. We go through, and we're safe on the other side, and we can, you know, get on with it. I think they can at school, so it doesn't have to be a prison-like environment. It's just an environment where they have to be very diligent, and they are.
4281393 is the number of the KSFR Fund Drive. Deborah Pickering is with the Marzano Research Laboratory, and she is here for the Los Alamos National Laboratory Foundation's 16th Annual Conference on Education, which is tomorrow from 8:30 to 3:30 at Buffalo Thunder Resort and Conference Center. Now, Billy Blair, if people want to go up there for the Lanell Foundation Conference, whether they're teachers, school board members, interested parties of one kind or another, what should they do?
People at this point can simply walk in. Registration starts at 7:30. There's a continental breakfast. Sign up. It's $75 for the day. That includes breakfast, lunch, and all the conference materials, plus access to these nationally and internationally known speakers.
So, Deborah Pickering, I want to thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe, and hope you have a wonderful conference here tomorrow. And
I'm sure we will. It's a wonderful setting.
Excellent. Well, thank you for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Okay, thank you.
So we're going to take just a little break now to hear from our underwriters, and we will be right back. And please take that as an opportunity to call us at 428-1393. We're about 20% of the way to our goal, and maybe by the end of the little break for our underwriters, we will be 30% of the way to our goal. So 428-1393 is the number, and you can also call our toll-free number, 866-907-5737, 866-907-KSFR. We'll be right back. Everything I say is true, and everything I say is not true. Is that the motto of the journalist?
No, because journalists are only reporting and interpreting, Mary Charlotte.
We are here with Billy Blair, who's Public Information Officer for the Lanell Foundation, but you have a long-time career as a writer, as a journalist.
Well, certainly in Santa Fe, I've had kind of three iterations, on your show. I was the Associate Publisher at the Santa Fe New Mexican, then I moved over to the Santa Fe Community Foundation, and now I am, quote, retired, close quote, and have a number of contracts doing marketing for various organizations, usually nonprofits, but some businesses as well.
So you are a public radio listener.
I am a huge fan of public radio. And I think that people take public radio for granted. It's like you get up in the morning and you turn on your coffee pot and you know it's going to turn on, and you turn on your radio. We were talking earlier about that I'm from Alabama, and I have a friend I visit frequently in Birmingham, and every morning she gets up, and that's her routine. She's a teacher. She gets up. First thing she does, she turns on public radio. Second thing, she turns on her coffee pot. I am concerned, and I'll talk to her about this when I see her next, that she takes the public radio for granted. She knows that she pays for her coffee, right? But is she sending a contribution regularly to public radio? I will just have to remind Ms. Christine about that.
That's right. And let's remind our listeners right now, for those of you who are listening and who listen to this show often, and believe me, I meet folks in public every once in a while. Somebody will hear me talking. Like one time I was in that little, one of those little cafes downtown, and I was asking the waitress for a cup of tea, and she said, "You sound just like that girl on the radio." I was like, "That's because I am." And people they say, "Oh, I listen to your show." People say, "I listen to your show all the time." And okay, if you're one of those people who listens to the show all the time, please pick up the phone right now and call and just make a contribution to it, because it is actually that little bill that you pay. Think of it as a little bill every 6 months that allows us to stay on the air. 428-1393 is the number, 428-1393. I think we have a report from the control room. Oh, I thought I heard a report from the control room noise. Guess not. Okay, we will say some thank yous in just a moment, but we would like to reach our $1,000 goal for this hour. I think we're about 25% of the way there, so we've got a half an hour left in which to reach our $1,000 goal. So, ladies and gentlemen, please step up. It's a little hard for me to have to keep asking. It's sort of like asking somebody out, you know, will you go out with me? Will you go out with me? It's like, if you like me, then just call. I don't feel like I should have to ask too much more. 428-1393. And we have a couple of anonymous donors who have donated, and I want to thank you all. You know who you are. So, Billy Blair, let's talk about your work as a writer. How did you start after the fifth grade?
After the fifth grade. Well, I actually published my own little newspaper. I used to print it up on school paper and sell it in the neighborhood for 5 cents and didn't make very much money doing that. And then went on, was the editorial page editor of my high school newspaper, because in those days, the person who got to be the editor was a boy. It was always a boy.
Always.
Yeah. And then went on to be editor of my college newspaper at the University of Alabama, 20,000 circulation, twice weekly paper. And then moved on to several other newspapers. I was first at the Hartford Courant, the nation's oldest newspaper, and then at the Atlanta Journal, which was a highly respected newspaper at the time, and also worked for the Birmingham News. But the favorite story I like to tell is when I came to New Mexico almost 40 years ago and settled in Taos. You knew I was a Taosina, right?
In a manner of speaking.
And settled in Taos. The only job I could find was as a bartender. And so I went to work at the Sagebrush Inn tending bar, and I was making $3 an hour plus tips. And finally, a job opened at the newspaper, at the Taos News, and the editor came and sat at my bar and offered me the job, and it was $2 an hour.
Good heavens.
And no tips. And I debated, what was I to do? But of course, I mean, it was in my blood, it's always what I've done, and so I took the job and got promoted and eventually was publisher of the Taos News.
Is that right? Now, when you were a reporter for all of these different newspapers, were you always a reporter?
I was actually not always a reporter, and here's why. We go back to the sexism thing again. When I applied at the Atlanta Journal in the 60s, this was well before your time, Charlotte, and these were heady days in Atlanta. It was during the Civil Rights Movement. It was during the hippie movement. There was a quota of women in the newsroom, and I was literally told that. They said, "We'd like to hire you, but we have our quota," because they thought that there were places they couldn't send women out to cover. They were too dangerous. And so they said, "We have an opening in the editorial department." They had a whole staff, including Roy Blount, the writer. You've probably read his work. Roy was leaving. And so I got his job. I mean, I was never like him, but I got his job. And I was the first woman they'd hired in that department. And we came in at 6 in the morning to decide what editorials we were going to write for the day for Atlanta, to tell the city of Atlanta, the city too busy to hate, And it really, Atlanta has done some fabulous things. What to do. And the guys, when they heard that I'd been hired, all said to the editor, they said, oh my goodness, we can't talk like we always talk. We can't talk so candidly and use the words that we sometimes use. And the editor said, I think you're going to be okay.
Wow. Do you remember some of the specific things? I mean, did you end up writing or putting out editorials that were very provocative?
Yes. Well, I was, again, I guess I was pigeonholed in a way. I became their women's issue and their hippie expert. So I wrote all the editorials on women's issues, and we were very pro everything.
Pro-civil rights, pro-women's issues.
Yes. And pro-hippie. I mean, you know, let's learn to live with this new community on 10th Street. And so I was assigned to do that because I actually lived a block away from 10th Street and spent some time there.
428-1393 is the number here at the KSFR Fund Drive, and we are squarely at 25% of our goal for the hour, and so we've got just 22 minutes left to reach our goal. I think we now have a report for the control room.
Yes, indeed. You know, we have from earlier on, someone donated in honor of Diego.
Oh, thank you.
Them. And then Jan Willem Jenkins. Jensens.
Janssens. Jan Willem Janssens. Thank you, Jan Willem.
And Susan Harris, who wants people to call in and contribute. And Tom Moore.
Thank you.
Carol Anthony.
Yay.
And another person contributed for your love of Dotsons and the Santa Fe Theater.
Dachshunds and theater. I once brought my dachshund to the theater during a...
What happened there?
Well, it was a funny thing because I was going to do a... I went to a rehearsal because I was going to do an interview about a play. And I had a little dachshund at that time named Dugan. And he really wanted to go because he does love poetry and theater. So, or he did. God rest, dog rest his little soul. And I took him and he was great until the threatening character came running down the aisle onto the stage, and then he started barking. 428-1393. It's probably not a good idea to bring your dachshund to the theater. Actually, there was a story like that, a true story. I think it was in the Santa Fe Opera. It was either a conductor or director of one of the operas had a little dachshund whom he had by his side, again, during an opera rehearsal, and it was one of those operas with a very bad guy, and the dog went crazy. The dog tried to defend the rest of the cast against the villain.
So is it all dogs or only dachshunds?
You know, that's a good question, and if you have an answer to that, ladies and gentlemen, call 428-1393 and tell your dog protective dog story, as well as giving a contribution to KSFR. 428-1393, and I hope those phones are ringing. I'm sitting here in the Santa Fe Baking Company and talking to the fabulous Billy Blair, but we really do want and need you to call, so 428-1393. Excuse me. So, Billy Blair, how did you get involved in education? Because in the last few years, since you have been coming on the show and bringing some of your folks from both UNM and LANL onto the program. How did you get involved in this whole world of education?
Well, education is really the bedrock for what we're going to be as a society. I think you referred to this earlier. We need an educated populace to be able to not only take jobs and keep this country, it's one of the leading countries in technological innovation in the world, but we need people who have the reasoning capacity to make good decisions and to build a good democracy. So education is really the bedrock for that. So I feel very good and very fortunate to work with people like the people at the LANL Foundation, where all the work is education focused. Some people think it's because it was originally funded by the Department of Energy and by Los Alamos National Securities, which is helping to support this conference, that it's about some of those things.
Why we should build nuclear weapons.
Right. But instead, it's for programs that we have a scholarship program. We give away $500,000 a year in scholarships, which is huge in New Mexico. And I get the privilege of interviewing these youngsters who've received these scholarships, and I'm in awe. They are so smart. They know things about, especially about science and medicine, that I will never know. I have to stop and say, would you break that down for me? Would you take that to the eighth grade level, which is what we learn in journalism to write to? On radio, do you speak at a certain level? You speak at a very high level, I think, on this program.
Well, I challenge the concept of level. I think, I mean, unless you use an extreme vocabulary, there will be, for example, scientists on this show, and I will ask them, what does that word mean? You know, because they'll be using something that you can't know unless you have a PhD in whatever that thing is. But I think that if you engage people, you can speak at the very highest level and everybody will be able to understand it if they're even at all interested.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, your programming is just is at such a high level. I mean, the fact that you can listen to the Radio Cafe and hear people talk about our water issues. I think, didn't you have Bill DeBuise on during the Great Aridus? One of my personal heroes.
He's amazing.
He is amazing. And talk about various government issues and give nonprofits an opportunity to tell all the wonderful things that they're doing in our community. You know, where would we be without community radio and without people like you doing this for us, Mary Charlotte? We wouldn't necessarily hear this any other place.
Well, community radio, I think, is very important. And I have to say, when I was growing up, we did not have community radio that I knew of. I am from Poughkeepsie, New York, and I listened to Top 40 AM radio until I was in high school. And in high school, I listened to alternative FM rock radio and just discovered public radio when I was a senior in high school and then in college and then in my early 20s. And I don't know how many young people I do have. I know we've got some young people listeners. And if you're listening right now and you are an elementary school or teenage student, poke your parents in the ribs right now and tell them to call 428-1393 and make a contribution to this station. We're just hitting 40% of our goal. So let's make it $1,000 for this hour, ladies and gentlemen. And please, please give us a call. It makes such a huge difference. But I didn't have a sense of my local area. The sense I had of my local area was sort of its nature that I got from walking around and looking at trees and animals and flowers and things like that, but not the kind of social and cultural environment that I was living in. I had really not a clue about Poughkeepsie. Still don't. We used to call it the city where urban renewal failed.
But what you do on the Radio Cafe is you bring that context to people. The same way we always encourage reporters in the newspaper business to bring context to their stories, not just to report, he said, she said, this is what's happening, this is what they said at the city council meeting. And so you give people information so they can make intelligent decisions. And that's hence my interest in education. I feel really good working for educational organizations because they're working to help people learn how to make good decisions, to have that kind of basis, to make judgments, to not just take something that's myth and suddenly make it into truth. And we see that a lot in Santa Fe.
What do you mean?
Well, I don't have any specifics that I would care to talk about, but don't you think you
take something that's myth and make it into truth in the newspaper?
No, not in the newspaper. Just as people in conversation.
Oh, right. The tricultural myth.
Yes.
For example.
That. Yes.
Yeah. I have a friend who's an anthropologist who was actually hired to do a study on all the other cultures besides the tricultures.
And who are they?
Oh, I mean, there's a Nigerian community here.
Uh-huh.
There's a Greek community. There's a Tibetan community. There were some Japanese, various other Asian people. I can't remember what it was. A lot of other people, and also, I mean, there's a small Peruvian community, and the different South American countries all have their own universes and cultures and music and ways of thinking and ways of eating and all of that. So it's that's one of those examples.
Yeah, I did some research for another organization on healthcare equity. And one of the things we defined is that there are all those communities you just named. And when people go to, I hate to use this word, go to access healthcare or go to a clinic or go to a physician, they have different ways that they communicate. And we're not always culturally ready to deal with it. And I'm not talking about language. It's not a matter of language.
Yeah.
It's how you talk to people about your health problems.
Very
and you and I would be right out there very candid about our problems, I would guess. I certainly am. But other cultures might not be.
Right, and so how women communicate about what's going on in their bodies, how men communicate, whether you have a family member in with you. I've been with people who would never consider going to the doctor by themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the family goes together. The husband and wife go together, whatever. You don't,
yes.
You don't separate people in that way. And those are cultural differences that it's very important to learn. 4281393. We're having a little bit of quiet over in the phone room, and we've only got 12 minutes left, so I don't know if we're going to make our goal. It puts me in a vulnerable position to have to keep asking, and it makes me a little bit sad, because I have bronchitis this week, and I've been taking Dayquil and NyQuil and Slippery Elm and all of these things so that I can get on the radio. And I would like to be home in bed right now, honestly, because it's hard sometimes to work when you're not feeling well. And we would just so love it if people who listen to this program would just simply support it. You don't have to have your name read aloud on the air. You don't have to make a large contribution. It's just any amount at all. And we give goals every hour, or I give goals at least every hour, and many of us do. And many of us have challenges. We had a challenge yesterday thanks to the wonderful Diane Karp. And so people doubled the match that she gave. She gave a $500 challenge, and then we brought in over 1,000. And we'd like to be able to do that today, but we can't do it unless you call 4281393. Many people have called. Many people have sent a contribution based on the letter, and if you've done that, we thank you. And if you want to maybe give just another $10 by calling right now, and that would bring us up to meet our goal today. And if you haven't donated yet, it would just be so wonderful if you did.
And I want to empathize with what you're saying, Mary Charlotte, because we don't have another medium where we ask the people who are the reporters, who are the talent, to go out and make the ask. We have people sell advertising on commercial television, on commercial radio. We have people sell advertising for newspapers, for online sites. But you have to, and all the personalities on KSFR, have to go on the air during this period and say, please, please help pay my salary and help keep the tower up.
That's
and
right.
The tower's on Pajarito, is that correct? Where's your tower?
Marilyn, where's our tower? I don't know where.
Pajarito.
Pajarito.
That
see? How did I know that and you didn't?
Because you're a journalist. I am too. Wait.
So I would like to just make that ask, because I am a constant listener. I constantly come to your show to try to get the word out about things that would be helpful to people in the community to know. And I'm a big supporter of community radio myself. And I hope that Tom Moore, who just gave, was my neighbor Tom Moore. But if it's not, Tom Moore, you give too. And everybody who's listening, very easy just to call 4281393 and make a donation toward Mary Charlotte's health.
Thank you. I know, they're going to probably hospitalize me on Saturday afternoon at 6 o'clock. 4281393. I am also on in the afternoon, and actually this afternoon we have a very interesting program. I've been reading a book by our board president, Marilyn Mason, who started, I think, in her 40s, rock climbing and mountain climbing. And she wrote a book called Seven Mountains, Life Lessons from a Climber's Journal, which has just an unbelievable picture of, I don't know if this is the Himalayas or what, but a very, very mountainous, craggy peak, which you wouldn't catch me dead up up on that on that level. But we are talking about that book, and people will be able to, only during that hour, get a copy of the book. So that's something, if you haven't donated by the end of this hour, if you want to donate once now and once then, it would be just awesome. But I am on from 5 to 6, which is the time slot that Diego Mulligan was in for so many years. And we are dedicating each of those hours to the memory of Diego and to everything that he gave to the community through his work in public radio.
And we all miss Diego so much. I remember being on his drive time show, and just like you, Mary Charlotte, so insightful, so knowledgeable about so many topics, and he is sorely missed in our community.
428-1393 is the number, and we will get an update in just a few minutes. So you are with the Lanell Foundation. You're also doing work, Billy Blair, with the University of New Mexico.
That has actually ended. We were doing public policy conferences because we got a new dean.
Oh, okay.
And less money.
Oh.
And
So, yes, the crisis in education, the financial crisis is hitting us all. At least they haven't shut down the state universities.
Exactly.
What's your perspective on the government shutdown, if any?
Oh.
ladies and gentlemen, she just gave me one of those don't get me started looks.
Well, it's really interesting when you look at the surveys of the American public and where they place the blame. And I was sitting in a doctor's office the other day, and someone said, well, you should just get them all in a room and not let them out, not let them eat, and not let them go to the bathroom until they've come to a conclusion. I'm speaking now not for any of my clients, but for me as a retired individual who can now be a crazy old lady and speak her mind. It is a Republican hostage situation.
Yeah.
And there are perhaps some technical ways to end this, but I certainly hope that the president and the Democrats hold firm on this particular, on the funding bill, and on what has now been termed Obamacare. It's interesting, when it was first Obamacare, it was a nasty word. And now Obamacare sounds so perfect for it.
Yeah.
Because doesn't everybody, Obamacare actually doesn't go far enough.
Yeah.
We need a single payer system. But
and most people who are inside of medicine and who have to deal with it say that we need a single payer system.
Right. But Boehner cannot, and the other Republicans cannot, be held hostage by this minority of Tea Party advocates who are sure of their seats because of this redistricting plan, which was called, I believe, Red Dot. Remember the Red Dot redistricting plan?
Right.
So that they would create these very secure Republican seats.
428-1393 is the number. When we talk about education, I can't help but think of a couple of things that I've read over the last few years. One of them is that a very high percentage of conservatives think that Stephen Colbert is actually a conservative.
Uh-huh.
And that relates to the question of critical thinking in schools.
It does.
I mean, if you teach people really how to look at a situation, look at media, analyze it, see what's going on, you are not capable of thinking that.
And, you know, when I was thinking, driving over here today, about the Lanell Foundation conferences, and this being the 16th, I remember the very first conference I attended, and I was actually at the New Mexican at the time, and Susan Herrera, who's the CEO of the foundation, who is just one of the smartest women you ever hope to meet, invited people from throughout the community to come to that conference. And Ruby Payne was speaking. If you ever read any of her work,
no.
She writes about the culture of poverty. And it's very controversial, so it's very gutsy of Susan and the Lanell Foundation to bring her here, because she posits that there are kind of three cultures in the United States, and once you're locked into the culture of poverty, that you have certain norms and rules that you play by that you're reluctant to get out of, and then people in that culture don't tend to learn as well, because learning is not a critical skill that's valued. And you're talking about books. I remember reading a book called Random Family. Have you ever read that?
No.
And I thought, a friend gave it to me, and I started reading it, and I thought it was a novel. without reading the book jacket.
Right.
And then I went back when I was about halfway through, and I read the book jacket. And
it was
found
a memoir.
It was nonfiction. It was the actual story of people living in poverty in the Bronx or Brooklyn, I can't remember which, and their culture, where they thought that to ride around in a big car, to have a nice dress, not necessarily to go to school, but that was the ideal.
Very, very interesting. Random Families, ladies and gentlemen. We can probably order that very quickly from our local bookstore or online. Marilyn LeBlanc has a report from the control room.
Oh, boy, do I. The phones have been ringing, and your listeners have been most appreciative. And so many of them said in honor of you, especially Ann Anthony.
Oh, thank you.
And Ann Wrinkle.
Thank you.
And there was another one that said that. Maybe I'll come to it. But also thanks from Lois Hill and Charles Forrest.
Thank you so much.
And Ray Lyon, who just really hopes you get better, Mary Charlotte.
Thank you.
And Shabana Sin.
Oh, thank you.
And Maria Cristina Lopez, who appreciates you so much. She thinks you're quite extraordinary.
She's pretty extraordinary.
And we're so very close right now.
We are very, very close to our $1,000 goal. So let's, in the next couple of minutes, we only have a minute and a half left in this show. Please make those phones ring and let us reach our $1,000 goal, 428-1393. Billy Blair, 428, going to give it one more time. I've given this number about 5 million times. 428-1393. Are you going, Billy Blair, to this conference?
I wouldn't miss it for the world. I will be there at 7:30 in the morning at Buffalo Thunder Resort, and I hope anybody who's interested will show up and register and hear these two fabulous speakers, Dr. Deborah Pickering and Dr. Ken Wesson, to learn about brain-based learning.
Brain-based learning. That sounds like a very tall order.
I think he can break it down. So I've read some of his things. He can break it down so you can understand it.
Very interesting. Well, you have been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. Billy Blair is with us. She's the Lanel Foundation's Public Information Officer. And once again, the 16th Annual Conference on Education is tomorrow morning, tomorrow all day, from 8:30 to 3:30. You can get there up to an hour early to register if you want to. We are streaming live on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org. Thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services. You can find us at facebook.com/radiocafemc. My email is radiocafe@ksfr.org. And please write. I love it when people write. And I've got a couple of regulars who write and sort of comment on what's going on and what their thoughts were and how they responded to it. And some people write once a year, but it's just great to get that feedback from listeners. So truly feel free to write. Unless I'm super, super busy, I almost always write back. Or at least I try to. Stay tuned for the BBC, local news, and more KSFR Fun Drive. Adios.